I'm on the road to recovery, step by step. Tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own. Beyond my ears, I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group, Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. Let's welcome Spencer for the joke of the night.
Hey, Spencer, alcoholic joke teller. And I got drunk as a skunk, 150 plus jokes for beer lovers, wine connoisseurs, and raging alcoholics. If the liquor store didn't want me to drink all of the alcohol, then why they, that joke stinks. As soon as I figure out who drank my two cases of beer, I'm going to try to figure out why I'm so drunk.
Nailed it. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Zach Stone. And can we please have Don for our secretary's report?
Good evening, guys. I'm Don. I'm a recovered alcoholic secretary. Hey, guys. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are going around now. Let's help keep this well-oiled machine of a meeting well-oiled with your contributions as possible. I've asked JR to read tonight's recovered statement. JR. Now, we read this notice to explain why many people in A identify as recovered and recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. JR.
JR, alcoholic. It's recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. The presence of conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for a lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. Page 23, we are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Now, 1940-style big book sponsorship from forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. Now, the statistics I just quoted suggest a 75% success rate, so that's good stuff. Important question. Is anyone here looking for a sponsor tonight? If you are, raise your hand. Anyone looking for a sponsor tonight? We got one there. All right, cool. Another one there. Okay, cool. Will those who are willing to sponsor have a working knowledge of the 12 steps? Raise your hand. All right, so guys, those who are looking for a sponsor, you have plenty of options here. What I suggest is after the meeting, go hang out back by the piano, look all awkward, and someone who knows what they're doing will come find you and get you squared away. Takes a lot of courage to raise your hand looking for a sponsor, so you're on the right path. All right. Now, can all the recovered alcoholics raise their hand? Good stuff. Now, if your hand was not raised, we suggest you hang out with those who did raise their hand. All right, let's some announcements. Broward County Intergroup. Who serves all the AA. I don't have my sheet here, so I'm going to... Oh, sorry. Thought it was white. Intergroup is where you buy AA-related literature and medallions, and Intergroup is also responsible for creating our when and where and scheduling the AA hotline. Stop by and visit them. Next slide. BCIC is responsible for bringing membership meetings into places where people like us can get out to an AA meeting, such as jails, detoxes, rehabs, and the like. Now, they meet monthly to organize the meeting schedules at the 12-step house. Do we have anybody from BCIC in the house tonight? Raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. Too much to count. Good, guys. Good. We have a lot of people in BCIC here tonight. Now, if you're interested in getting involved in BCIC, I suggest you talk to one of the people there who raised their hand tonight. They'll get you set up, man. All right, next slide. Now, he's got talent. I heard it's sold out in terms of the show or the talent. So, got a full lineup. February 1st at Coral Springs Charter School, $15 for seats, and seating's limited. So, get your tickets now. We have a volunteer opportunity. The next appreciation banquet will be held on the 22nd at the Intergroup Bookstore. If you're interested in getting some volunteer work, some service work, check out that. What else we got? We got the man from Arizona here for a few more weeks. He's here until February 6th. So come back again next week. And after that, when he's done, we have Miriam doing her six-week engagement. So the lineup for 2025 is solid, man. Good stuff. On Monday, we have a big book study. We are in There Is a Solution. No, I'm sorry. I always get it messed up. More about alcoholism. 7:15 in this very room right here. If you can't make it, we are on Zoom right now. So it's a very enthralling big book study. I encourage you to attend if you're looking to know more about the big book. Next slide. I believe that's it. All right, cool. All right. Now we have CDs, mugs, large print, big books, little red books. Big book dictionaries for sale. We're running a sale on mugs tonight, 2 for $15. And I was told that Tom will autograph all mugs tonight. So get an autograph mug from Tom tonight and tonight only. Now, we meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15. We ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the Red Recovery Tune. Enjoy the meeting, guys.
Thank you for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all your devices that make noise and might/will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away. And ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? All right, let's start the meditation. Thank you. right, we're going to do the fog light prayer now. It's shared on the screen for you to follow along with. God. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. And I have asked Josh to read Appendix 2, The Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it is kind of important to know what one is.
My name is Josh. I'm an alcoholic. What do we got? Here it is. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety. Because it develops slowly over a period of time, quite often friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance, by belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery. But these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer. Thank you.
All right. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane/meeting mode, or just turn it off. Time to introduce the speaker. Last week was the first week I got to hear Sam. I'm really excited. I know he's from Arizona. I don't know much about Arizona except those cans that are 99 cents. But let's welcome Sam. Tom.
It's okay. We're going to talk about the 4-step tonight, okay? How's everybody doing? All right. My name is Tom, not Sam. Although I had to work for Uncle Sam, and he got tired of me and threw me out. He wasn't too crazy about my heroin habit. Anyway. I had a counselor ask me once, Tom, does anybody else in your family suffer from alcoholism? And I said, well, they all pretty much enjoy it. And I did too until I didn't, you know. So, yeah, I want to talk about 4, 5, and 6 tonight. And, you know, I can remember when I finally, you know, got to this place where I finally surrendered, which didn't come easily to me, you know. For those that haven't been with me the past 2 weeks, yeah, my sobriety date is December the 9th, 1983. But that's not when I got here. I got here in 1973. And it took 11 years for me to get the first one. Because I was always good with compliance, but not too good when it came to surrender. You know, compliance only works until everything gets complied. Once everything's complied, well, we're done. We're done here. I don't need any more of this. So when I finally did come to that surrender, and a man took me, a man who had challenged me to pray that I talked about last week, you know, I didn't see any need for that. And he asked me, "How's your way been working, wise guy?" And when I told him my way had not worked, he said, "Well, then it doesn't make any difference what you believe in, because what you believe in doesn't work, right?" I said, "You're right." He said, "Well, you know what? You don't have to believe. It's not about what you're willing to believe. It's about what are you willing to do. Are you just willing to try it, try to be sincere?" And I said, "Yeah." And then as I shared last week, I came upon the time when I realized that the obsession for me to drink and to drug was gone. And that has not returned since in all these years. And have not stopped praying, because why would I stop doing something that works? It worked, and I became a believer. And then I got on my knees with him in the old Central House, American Legion, after the men's meeting. I had to get down on my knees with this old man and hold his hand. I was 32 years old. And I kept looking at the door thinking somebody else was going to walk in and see us there, you know. I was embarrassed about it. And he said, "Now," he says, "I'm busy." He said, "So you find somebody to take you through the rest of these steps." And one of the things that, you know, because I want to talk about my defects of character, that's what I'm going to be talking about. I want to talk about, you know, how I come through this four step and how it's done, you know. And there's lots of ways to do it. I think that all that really matters is that you do it. I really believe that it had to be done. I mean, the first three steps will get you sober. They may not keep you sober, but they're the foundation that I need. I really don't think that I could have gone on with the steps if I hadn't have come to the first three steps. That I can't, that he can, and that I think I'll let him. It's a decision that I made in the third step. The decision I'm making is to go on with the steps. You know, I was once told to me that God, as we understood him, it's that it's understood that this way of life will work. It was understood by all the people that came before us that this decision to turn our life and our will over to the care of God and go on with these steps will bring us to the place where we need to be in sobriety, in ongoing daily sobriety, in the day I'm in. Because it's in the day I am in that I am treating my alcoholism. The man who tried to help me for years, who never saw me get it, was a man named Tex. I used to hang around him at the 101 Club. And he used to say, "You know, yesterday's booze ain't getting me drunk today, and yesterday's sobriety ain't keeping me sober today. You better ask yourself, what are you going to do today to stay sober? Because today's the only day that you've got." And, you know, I felt so guilty, and it's, you know, it's what we're talking about when we start talking about looking at my life in the past. I can imagine things. How do I really even know what this is all about? Well, do I really need to analyze it? These old timers that brought me up in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, they taught me that analysis brings about paralysis. That Alcoholics Anonymous is not a self-help program. It's not therapy. It's not psychology. It's not self-analysis. It's about taking a complete and fearless moral inventory about right and wrong. And of course, you know, when it comes to alcoholism, we hear a word bandied about quite a bit called denial. Well, denial is not an Alcoholics Anonymous term. Denial is a therapy term. The term we have always used in Alcoholics Anonymous is delusion. And there's a big difference between denial and delusion. And believe me, I came here full of delusion. You know, when I remember when this man who brought me to God looked me in the eye and said to me, "You know what, Tom? I was a liar, a cheat, and a thief. And I never met another alcoholic who wasn't." And the first thought that went through my mind was, is he talking about me? I mean, he can't be talking about me. I'm a nice guy. I actually really believed that I was this nice guy when I would steal your dope and help you look for it. When I would get you drunk and try to screw your old lady. But I'm a good friend. I'm a stand-up guy. I was a guy that laid in the gutter and could look down on you. What we referred to as a low-bottom snob. That's who I was. I had no use of high-bottom people. A long time ago, the old 12-step house used to be down here on Las Olas, when down there on Las Olas wasn't a very nice neighborhood. And I used to hang down there with this little carny named Tommy Horrigan. I used to say he's about a half a midget. He had real stumpy fingers. And he liked to go up on the strip, you know, and have a piece of pizza and look at all the girls. And we, of course, you got to go across the intercoastal and you start walking through them nice neighborhoods. And you get in front of one of these big, beautiful mansions, and we're standing there, and he says, "Tommy," he talked real rough, "Tommy, you see this place here?" I says, "Yeah, Tommy." And he says, "There's people living in this house that are living on Skid Row." And I thought, "You're nuts. What's he talking about? People living in this house on Skid Row?" I said, "They're rich people." You know, I don't like rich people. "They're rich people. They're not living on Skid Row. They got everything." "Tommy, the Skid Row they're living on is in their mind." I come to understand what that meant. I come to understand through the process of the work, through the process of the fourth step. Now, your sponsor, you know, he's the guy that's going to take you through the fourth step. I'm not going to take you. I'm not here to lecture you on how things ought to be done. I'm here for the same reason I've always been here, and in Alcoholics Anonymous was taught a long time ago by a little man named Ron Martin, long dead. I always use people's names who are dead. He used to say, "I don't come to Alcoholics Anonymous to give advice. I don't come to Alcoholics Anonymous to take advice. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous to share my experience, strength, and hope." And that's what I come to listen to, because that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. It's a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope, and not their opinions and ideas. So I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope with you on the 12 steps and how it worked with me, with the guy that I got, because I came out of the VA hospital. And just to give you an example of how sick my alcoholism had brought me to this soul sickness, because I know what I suffer from. I suffer from a spiritual malady. I started getting sick long way before I ever picked up a drink. Believe me, alcohol did not make me an alcoholic. See, I suffer from alcoholism, from a disease that centers in my mind. It's a talking disease. It talks to me. It tells me all about me, and it tells me all about you, and it tells me all about the world, and it's talking to me all the time, or what a lot of people refer to as the committee, telling me the way things ought to be, the way people ought to treat me, the way life ought to go my way, and why hasn't it gone my way, and why hasn't that person treated me right, and how come people don't do the right things, and blah, 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 blah. And you think that disease stopped talking to me? No, that disease still talks to me, because I still have alcoholism. I don't got alcoholism. It's an ism, never a wasm. And that's what Tex meant. You better treat your alcoholism now. I always felt guilty because he never saw me get this thing. He died, and he always tried to help me. Every time I would go back out, he would call me on the phone. And this is back in the 70s, okay? You don't know who's calling you on the phone in the 70s, right? We didn't have caller ID in those days. It rang and you picked it up. You didn't know who was going to be on the other end. Or I would have never picked it up. Because I'm already done over there at the 101 Club. I got all my stuff back. I got everything taken care of. I got my license back, my car back, my job back, my girlfriend back, my place to live back. Roll off my back. Now I don't need this anymore. I'm getting back to living my life, because I'm too young when I got here. I was 21 when I got here. Way too young. I still had a lot of good times left. I still had a lot of things that hadn't happened to me yet. I hadn't been to jail yet. In the 10 years I spent around here, I used to say in and out, but I don't even say that anymore. Because I realized years ago, I was never in. I was just around. There's a big difference between being in Alcoholics Anonymous and being around Alcoholics Anonymous. The people that are in Alcoholics Anonymous are doing the work. The people that are around Alcoholics Anonymous are just here out of compliance, like I was, to get their court card signed, to get their stuff back, like me. And a man that used to be my sponsee brother in those days, Tex used to sponsor both of us, years later became my sponsor. He stayed sober and I didn't. And I said to him one time, his name's Don, I said, "Don, you know, I wish Tex would have seen me get this thing. I really feel guilty, you know, that he tried to help me so much, because when I go out, he'd call me on the phone. He'd say, well, how you doing?" And that used to just gripe my ass, you know. Why is he calling me and bothering me, you know? How am I doing? And I'd say, I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine, you know. And then he'd say, "Yeah? Well, you know where to come when you get ready." That would really piss me off. I'd say, "Yeah, I know where to come. I know where to come." And then he'd say, "Yeah, well, did anybody tell you they love you today?" Then how are you supposed to be mad with that? I'd say, "No." He'd say, "Well, I do." So I felt guilty. I told Don, I said, "I wish Tex would have seen me get this thing." I said, "You know, I even went to Texas I was drunk out of my mind, high on coke and drunker than hell." I said, "I remember staring in his face, looking right at him in the casket. And Don said, well, Tommy, that just goes to show us how good your alcoholic recall is. And I said, how's that? And he goes, it was a closed casket. So you can imagine things. Imagine things out of emotions, you know, that may never have even happened. It's not about analysis. Analysis brings about paralysis. So the guy that took me through it, I found him coming out of the Saturday Evening Post meeting one night. Tommy N. from New York City, black Irishman like me. And I ran into him. We were funneling through the door because it was a big speakers meeting. And we were shoulder to shoulder. And I looked at him and I said, hey, man, I know you. And he said, yeah, I know you too. He said, a few years ago, you were chairing a meeting in Coral Springs. And you asked me to come and speak. And I came and you didn't show up. I said, yeah, that's because I got drunk. I said, but I just got out of the VA and, you know, I've made this surrender and I've made the first three steps. I'm solid and I need somebody to take me through the steps. And he took me to coffee. And he started me on the fourth step. And he brought me up in the steps the way that he was taught at Bark years ago. Bark used to have a 12-step program. And, you know, it was a pretty simple thing. It was a life story where I had to start out asking myself, and I was only allowed to ask myself because he said to me, you know, and I'm just sharing my experience, strength, and hope with you. I am not telling you that this is the right way or the wrong way. I'm not here to do that. Because I'm not a believer in that. We have a way of doing things, and we have to find the way that works for us. Like I was brought up in this program, this is your program. And you have to, we have all these suggestions. In your case, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you jump out of the airplane with a parachute, right? We suggest you pull the ripcord, right? Now, you can pull the ripcord with your right hand, or you can pull the ripcord with your left hand. What matters is that you pull the cord with one of your hands, okay? So you got to figure out which hand works for you. But I suggest you pull the cord. Or it's not the fall that's going to kill you. It'll be the sudden stop. All right? Well, anyway, he says, this is what I want you to do, because I said, well, that's not what it says in the big book. He says, listen, you know, this is the way I did it, the way I'm going to have you do it. And I'm going to tell you something. It's the way I've been having sponsees do it for the past 40 years. And I want you to start with a life story. And, you know, you're not allowed to think up this stuff on your own. Because how am I supposed to take a guy who's constitutionally incapable of being honest with himself and ask him to be honest now? Because you're not really good at being honest. See? What I really was what that man that brought me to God said, a liar, a cheat, and a thief. And still thought I was a nice guy. He said, I want you to get a notebook, linear page paper in it. It's a three-part. And you're going to start on the first part is a life story. And you're going to think back as far back as you can remember. First of all, you're only going to write about 30 minutes every day. And I want you to get on your knees. I want you to ask God to open your mind, clear your mind, and help you to start to put this down on paper. And there's only two questions. There's only two questions that you're going to answer through your whole life. And that is, whatever happened to you that you felt bad about, and whatever happened to you that you felt good about. And you're not allowed to analyze the reason why you felt good or felt bad. Just the situation. Either you felt good about it or you felt bad about it. You're going to write that down. Blah, blah, blah happened to me and I felt good. Blah, blah, blah happened to me and I felt bad about it. And you're going to leave a line in between every line because that's for the second part. And when you get to the second part, after you do the first part, and it doesn't matter how much you write because you can't write too much. You can only write too little. So don't worry about how much you're writing. I wrote 57 pages. Of course, that's every other line. Now, the second part, you know that list of assets and liabilities? I says, yeah. He says, now you're going to take that list and you're going to start. That's what the empty space in between all the lines is for, and you're going to start labeling your assets and your liabilities. Because we're doing an inventory of what you got that you don't need and what you got that you ought to hang on to. And then the third thing you're going to do is you're going to count all these up and see what your main defects of character are, what your main assets are. And you'll have an inventory. And you'll put it all together and you'll see how you've done the same things over and over again, expecting a different result in your life. And it gives me a picture of my past. And it tells me that I had three main defects in my character because it came up over and over and over again. First of all, the biggest one was self-condemnation. I condemned myself to myself my whole life. I was never good enough. I never fit in. When I was a kid, way before I ever picked up a drink, I never felt like I belonged. I always knew something was wrong. I never could put my finger on it. I didn't know what it was. I learned here that it was restlessness, irritability, and discontent. But I looked at it like there is something wrong with me. There's something wrong with me. So I condemn myself to myself. And as a result of that, I built a character. I built a character to enforce this feeling of low self-esteem that I had about myself. So I created this character. And I raised this character up. I built this character. This is the character that I brought into life. The character that came from this self-condemnation of myself. And it's called false pride. My number two defect. And then a hit number three, the big one, resentment. Because I resented everything that this created. So I am the typical alcoholic, like you have heard in many meetings over and over, and you will hear it all the time, the egomaniac with the inferiority complex, who's full of self-justification, self-rationalization. I'm a master of rationalization and justification to soothe my conscience, minimize my guilt, give me the ability to do whatever I think needs to be done. In other words, what it built was a mean, obnoxious, arrogant, loudmouth, aggressive alcoholic who would jump down your throat with both boots to prove you were wrong and I was right. Because that's all that mattered, was that I was right and you were wrong. For years being around AA, I argued with all the old timers. And like Tex, in their loving, kind way, they'd pat me on the back and they'd say, "That's okay, Tom, you got a right to be wrong." And that drove me nuts. What do they mean by that? I got a right to be wrong. How can you say that to a man, that he has a right to be wrong? You know, I wanted to belch you for saying that. I'm going to tell you how sick I was when I got in that VA hospital. We had a therapeutic community. We elected the officers there. And, of course, I was such an expert of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been around it 10 years. They elected me to president because I thought I knew so much. Like a man once told me, if you knew so much, what are you doing here? If you think you're so smart, what are you doing here? If you think you know how to run your life, what are you doing here? Just like that first step. You know, every time I've got a problem in the steps, every time I've got a problem in life, you know what I have? I have a first step problem. The reason I have a first step problem, I had a first step problem for years. You know what that first step problem was? Well, I just don't drink and I don't shoot dope, so I don't have any problem managing my life, because that's the problem that caused me to not manage my life. So if I don't drink and I don't use, then I don't have any problem. Case closed. If that was the case, then how come I always drank again? Answer me that. Because, you see, I still have alcoholism. And my life is still unmanageable. But it's not unmanaged. It's managed by a power greater than me through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, a day at a time. In the day I'm in, treating my alcoholism. And so I get in there and, we all share in the morning meeting. All the people in the community, all the professionals, everybody shares. And then this man comes in with a notebook, and he sits over in the corner of the room, and he sits there, but he doesn't share. And he's writing stuff in the notebook. And I start focusing on him. Who's that guy? What's he writing in that book? He's probably writing stuff about me. And as the days go by, my resentment towards this man builds. This man's never said a word, and I hate him. Within a week, I hate this man, and he's all I can do is focus on him. Because I don't like this. And then they say, we're going to have a class on assertiveness. Now listen, by the time I got finally surrendered, I had a four-letter vocabulary. F this, F that, and F you, okay? I didn't know anything else. And I didn't know what assertiveness meant, and they sent us downstairs. We go to this classroom, and here's this joker. I said, oh, here's this joker. We go in, we sit down at little desks like you're in school, they can hardly squeeze in the desk, sit down there for little kids. And he's got a chalkboard, and he writes Mr. So-and-so on there. I go, what is this? Can't this, like grade school or something? Come on. I'm angry, man. And he puts a one, and he puts passive, and then he makes some hash marks, and he puts a five, and he puts assertive. Then he makes some more hash marks, and he puts a 10, and he puts aggressive. And he turns around, and he said, now all of you alcoholics. Now I get really pissed because he's saying, you alcoholics, he's preaching to me. He ain't an alcoholic. He's preaching to me, a non-alcoholic. I don't need some non-alcoholic telling me nothing. All of you alcoholics, you all fall in this category somewhere. You people down here that are a one, you're the most dangerous men in here. You're the ones I see that are sitting there. You never open your mouth, but I can see the muscles grinding, your jaw muscles, and I see you grinding your teeth. You're the guys that stuff and stuff and stuff everything. Never talk about nothing, and then one day all of it blows out the side of your neck and some poor bastard catches everything that a whole lot of people should have got a little bit of. And you need to learn to step up, to assert yourself. And then on the other end of the scale, we got you maniacs. You crazy guys that are always yelling and screaming and running your mouth. And you need to calm down. You need to learn to calm down and just learn how to assert yourself. And he turned and he pointed at me and he said, "You're the most aggressive man in this community. And I doubt if you'll stay sober." And I said, "Yeah, F you, of course." Of course, that's what I said. You know? So we learn about ourselves. We learn about ourselves, and we have to go and we have to, you know, get rid of all this. I mean, I've been carrying this stuff around with me, about me, all my life. And it has not served me well. It has hurt me. It's hurt me terrible. My whole life. You know, well, I love this line in step 4 in the 12 and 12. The primary fact that we fail to recognize is our total inability to form a true partnership with another human being. Our egomania digs two disastrous pitfalls. Either we insist upon dominating the people we know, or we depend upon them far too much. If we lean too heavily on people, they will sooner or later fail us, for they are human too, and cannot possibly meet our incessant demands. In this way, our insecurity grows and festers. When we habitually try to manipulate others to our own willful desires, they revolt and resist us heavily. Then we develop hurt feelings, a sense of persecution, and a desire to retaliate. As we redouble our efforts at control and continue to fail, our suffering becomes acute and constant. We have not once sought to be one in a family, to be a friend among friends, to be a worker among workers, to be a useful member of society. Always we try to struggle to the top of the heap or to hide underneath it. This self-centered behavior blocked a partnership relation with any one of those about us. Of true brotherhood, we had small comprehension. Those words hit home because it's talking about me. That's what it's talking about. It's talking about the character that I brought into Alcoholics Anonymous. This character that has not served me in my life. And I don't want to talk about all that. You know, I don't want to share all that with another human being. I'm willing to tell somebody most of it. See? This sponsor, he is a great guy. He told me right away, he said, "Listen now, Tom, this is just the fourth step. I don't want you thinking about the fifth step." So as soon as he told me that, guess what I started doing? I started thinking about that fifth step. And I started thinking, man, some of this stuff, you know, because see, I was not a nice person. And I did not do nice things. Not only was I an alcoholic and a drug addict, but I was a criminal too. I'd been a criminal ever since I was a kid. I'd run in gangs since I was in the fifth grade. So that I didn't there were a few things I thought, well, you know, God knows and I know and you know, I'm just going to leave that out. I'm going to take that to the grave with me. And the night I was going to finish that fourth step, finish the life story part, I went to a meeting. And in that, this man came to the meeting. And he was there to talk about the fourth and the fifth step. And guess what he said? He said, "You know, there were things that I was going to take to the grave with me." And I did. I didn't share them all in the fifth step. And for the 5 years after that, I couldn't move on in the steps. I didn't drink, but I was miserable. And I ended up in therapy. And I went to a psychologist, and I did all this work, and I finally got a new sponsor, and he was the one that brought it out of me and said, "You left stuff out of your fifth step." And we went back and redid that and brought all that out. And for years now, I was able to go on with the rest of the steps, and I live a happy, joyous, and free life. And you see, I'd already messed around for 10 years. And I was taught to pray through this whole thing. Every time I went to write, to ask God to help me, to open my mind, to give me the courage to put down everything. And I knew that God had sent that man there that night to talk to me. Because I had already wasted enough time. And I went home and I put all that stuff in there. And when I shared that with my sponsor, who shared with me that some of these things I thought were so terrible, he had done himself. He asked me this question. He said, you know, you're well-read. You understand world history, right? I says, yeah, I understand world history. And he said, well, how long has mankind been on the earth? I said, well, I think the oldest skeleton they've found so far is around 3 million years old. He says, so man has been around a long time. Yeah. Well, what makes you think that you could think of or do anything that hasn't been thought of or done already? Who do you think you are? This is what we call pride in reverse. That we think that we're just so terrible that nobody else could think of or do such a thing. But it's all been done already. It's all been thought already. We're all pretty much the same. I've been listening to Fifth Steps for years. Some of them worse than mine. Some of them like mine. Some not as bad as mine. But I ain't been surprised by anything. And I've heard an awful lot. We get to this Fifth Step. And when I was done with it, you know, and he had me go home, think about it for a while. You know, like it talks about in the big book, have we tried to make mortar without sand? Well, I'm an old hod carrier. You can't make mortar without sand. Have you done everything? Have you put everything on paper? Have you shared that all with another human being? The biggest thing that I learned about sharing with another human being is that we'll never come to any humility. We think it's all right just to share it with God. It's easy to share it with God. We know. God knows. When I do a fifth step, when it was the way, same way it was done with me, I'll have a guy go in another room, like it was done with me, and sit down by himself and share all that with God first. Then come and sit down with me, like I sat down with my sponsor, and share everything with him. And I'm going to tell you something that happened to me. And I've heard this story many, many times. It was like an 800-pound gorilla was taken off of my back. I had this feeling that the old life was over. It was done. And I wasn't ever going back to where I'd been before all those years in that revolving door of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was going to stay sober, and I knew it. I knew it in my heart that I was going to stay sober. I have. Don't go away until the miracle happens. And the miracle will happen. But we have to do our part. I have a part to do in this. I'm in the action business. I'm not in the outcome business. God is in the outcome business. My part is to take the action and to leave the outcome to God. I don't belong in the outcome of my life. Believe me, that's not, it's not easy. It's simple to say. Everything I ever let go of has got claw marks all over it. I don't let go of nothing easy. But you see, I've never changed out of virtue. I've only changed out of pain. It took the pain of my alcoholism for me to get sober. And it's taken a lot of emotional turmoil within my sobriety to bring me to serenity. But no matter what happens in my life, there's nothing, nothing that a drink or a drug is going to make better. It's only going to make it worse. You know, this thing, this vile alcoholism, you know, it hangs over us. All these failings of mine, they generate fear. Everything is fear-based. It all comes out of fear. Page 49 in the 12 and 12. A soul sickness in its own right. Then fear in turn generates more character defects. Unreasonable fear that our instincts will not be satisfied drives us to covet the possessions of others, to lust for sex and power, to become angry when our instinctive demands are threatened, to be envious when the ambitions of others seem to be realized while ours are not. We eat, drink, and grab for more of everything than we need, fearing we shall never have enough. And with genuine alarm at the prospect of work, we stay lazy. We loaf and procrastinate, or at best work grudgingly and under half steam. These fears are the termites that ceaselessly devour the foundation of whatever sort of life we're trying to build. You know, I've only been afraid of two things my whole life. Losing what I got or not getting what I want. The man that wrote this book called The Mind Power Disease, Bob Anderson, I heard him say in a talk, I don't know who you think about all day, but I know who I think about. I think about me. I wake up in the morning thinking about me, and I go to bed at night thinking about me. And the only time I think about you is how it relates to me. Think about it. Who do you think about? You know, and it's not just us. It's the world. It's all the people in the world. Look, the people of this world are insane. They are insane. We all think all about yesterday and all about tomorrow. And who is it that's in yesterday and tomorrow? We are. We're the ones that are in yesterday and tomorrow. So who are we thinking about? We're thinking about us. And I come to now this sixth step, you know, and I say, oh, I read it out of the big book, of course, you know, it's easy, right? One paragraph. I tell him, Al, I'm ready. Yeah, I'm entirely ready, sure. I'm entirely ready to have God remove all my defects of character. He said, well, hang on a second there, partner. He says, I got something I want you to do. I said, okay. What do you want me to do? And he said, well, he says, I want you to find three people you can't stand. I said, oh, that's easy. There's lots of people I can't stand. He said, and then I want you to find something good about each one of those people. I said, yeah, okay, I guess I could do that. But that's not all, he said. He said, when you find those three people and you find something good about each one of them, then I want you to go to each one of those people and I want you to tell them that good thing that you have seen in them. I said, oh, shit. And you got 2 weeks. All right. After 2 weeks, he said, how'd you do? I said, well, I found those three people, and I found something good about them. And I told two of them, but that third guy, I'll never tell him nothing good about himself. And he looked at me and said, well, I guess that just goes to show us. And I said, show us what? And he said, just how willing you are to change. I said, what do you mean by that? He said, about two-thirds willing. You're about two-thirds willing. But that's something that we can work with. This is the step that separates the men from the boys, so declares a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of AA's greatest friends. He goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step six on all his faults without any reservations whatever has indeed come a long way spiritually and is therefore entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his own creator. Oh, yes, he is. We think, like in the middle of page 64, haven't been granted a perfect release from alcoholism, why then shouldn't we be able to achieve by the same means a perfect release from every other difficulty or defect? I love this line. This line right here that says, this is a riddle of our existence, the full answer to which may be only in the mind of God. Yeah. 100% the first step. 100% the desire to drink and to use removed. 100%. But I'm still a human being, aren't I? I'm not getting out of that. I mean, you know, let's get rid of the big things. All the big things, you know. I got a sponsee. I got a few guys from my home group here tonight. They know him. Little Jerry, he used to say, yeah, I get rid of that desire to drink and to use, and then it's time to bring in the substitutes. Bring the substitutes in. You know, the gambling and the sex and the relationships and the woman chasing, you know, and the cars and the money and the power and the property. The substitutes. What's the next thing we're going to get hooked on? And let me tell you, I've been hooked on plenty in my sobriety. I got hooked on guns. I had every kind of gun you could imagine. I read every Guns and Ammo, every magazine. I knew about every. I bought and sold, and then it became dogs. And I had 19 American Bulldogs at one time. I was breeding American Bulldogs, selling them all over the country. I never made any money, but I was obsessed. And that's what we do. We go through these obsessions. You know, they drive us blindly. We want more and more. We think we can find happiness this way. But like a man taught me, he said, you know, you don't live right. You live on the outside of your life, trying to fix the inside of your life. My sponsor has a favorite line. When the interior is inferior, we fix up the exterior. Let's go to the gym. Let's get a new set of clothes. Let's get a new hairdo. Let's get this. Let's get that. Blah, blah, blah. Whew, man. Therefore, it seems plain that few of us can quickly or easily become ready to aim at spiritual and moral perfection. We want to settle for only as much perfection as will get us by in life, according, of course, to our various and sundry ideas of what will get us by. So what is that difference? Why is this the step that separates the men from the boys, the girls from the women? Because of this line. So the difference between the boys and the men is the difference between those striving for a self-determined objective, their own ideas of enough to get them by in this life, or for the perfect objective, which is of God. We're in a meeting one night. I'm several years sober. We're talking about character. And I said, I'm not satisfied with my character. Tex used to say, you know, I may not be the man I could be, and I may not be the man I want to be, but thank God I'm not the man I used to be. And just because I'm sober 41 years, that doesn't mean that I'm the man that I want to be or the man that I could be. And a newcomer came up after the meeting. He was mad at me. He said, how could you be sober all these years and say you're not satisfied with your character? I said, because, son, the day I become satisfied with my character is the day I'm on my way out that door. This won't be over until they throw the dirt in my face. That's when it'll be over, when I get out of being a human being. Because perfection is what we strive for. Nobody said you're going to get there. Nobody said you're going to be perfect. A perfect release, maybe. A perfect release. I love Bob Anderson. He got sober when I was born in 1952. He died in 1997, 47 years. He says in the end of his 12-step, six-step talk, I bought a GI house over in Canoga Park, California in March of 1954. The payment was $69 a month, including taxes and insurance. I kept the house 20 years. Now, during those 20 years, I used to drive down the street toward my house, and I'd think, I'm going to lose that thing. I ain't going to make it. They're going to take it away from me. They're going to repo my house. Can you imagine? I was making $100 a day. Now, $100 a day back then was a lot of money. That was my thought process because of the character I was at the time. I was used to living with failure, adversities of different kinds. I was used to struggling and losing. I didn't have the power to do anything else. After I found a higher power, the old thinking process would pop up every now and then. Then it would take me over. But it wouldn't stay because the principles have become a way of life for me. To keep this message alive, to make this life be what God says it will be, I have to stay with God. I have to stay with God. I have to live with Him. I have to go with Him. Step six makes it possible for me to stay with God. If adversity comes now, for me, it has meant coming close to death. I don't lose it. There were times when I didn't know what was going on, but I still went back to God. I asked God to stay with me, to help me, to protect me. I still do this today, right now. I have to do this because I have a disease called alcoholism. There's nothing wrong with my mind now. My mind is fine, but only because God says so. Now that's something to talk about. Maybe you've never spent a day running scared, but let the doctor tell you you're going to die. Say goodbye to your family. That's what they did to me. And what happened? I lost it for a little while, maybe a couple hours, and then it came back. What came back? Was no more than the strength of God, the assurance from God, the God consciousness that told me, no matter what happens, I'm going to take care of you. This assurance, in turn, set me free from me. And this is what I wanted all the time and never knew it. If I can only learn that this God is the only place I'll ever need to go, I'll be all right. I must be totally dependent on God. And this will happen through the steps. Thanks for letting me share.
Let's thank Tom again. We have tonight's session and all our past speakers podcasted for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. Again, I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night book study in this room at 7:15 p.m. And for those who wish to thank Tom, please line up down the center aisle. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer, sitting where you are. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
hearts thirsty, bodies aching. I am desperately in need of restoration. Yeah. And I am ready for you to take me higher. Yeah. The only thing that I can do is keep on praying. Cause on my own, I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. Load is heavy, too much accumulation. Since that I have amount to nothing at all. And I am willing to hand over every one of them. Cause they won't profit me anything in the end. On my own, I just can't. Yes, the sun.
time to rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope.
Dark, I'm gonna let it shine out in. Michael Chase. Here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.
I think you know this one, don't you? I've worked so hard for someone I don't know. so low.
Oh,
Thank you very much.